Hi, this is Alan Clark at the Hollies, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcast.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back again to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good folks at Pantheon Podcast. Pleased, as always, to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Podbay, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, so this is episode 47. We are going to be calling this Bands of Individuals. I couldn't think of a snappier title, but this basically explains this concept, and it's actually a pretty elevated concept, if you don't mind me saying. This is something I've always felt, and it's an episode I've been burning to do. So let's just get to it. I mean, essentially, one funny thing about this episode is it's not very heavy metal or hard rock, although I am going to be mentioning a lot of bands that are hard rock and heavy metal, but my examples per se are not particularly in that field. But I am going to end with a classic heavy metal band, so all shall be forgiven, I hope, by the end of this. I might mention a few honorable mentions myself. All right, so we're going to do this one a little bit differently. I hope it doesn't go on too long. I probably will shorten up when it comes to the actual entries, but I have a little bit of a long intro here. So I went to you, the fine listeners, and said, hey, give me some examples of this. And it's kind of funny. The examples started flowing in, and I'm going to read some of those in a second. But what I realized when I was reading these examples is I'm not too clear on what my concept is for this. I hope by the end of this episode, and when you hear my examples, you're going to understand what has always been stuck in my brain for decades, essentially, about bands that are like this and why I think there are certain bands truly, truly, truly like this. So let's just get on with that. So I sent off a Facebook cry for help here. So what did I say here? So here's a really cool concept that I'm at four at, but need one more, as I said. Bands of individuals, an ecosystem is created with a clear north, south, east, and west. It's an ecosystem that is not one world, but four fiefdoms that comprise a complex world. I've thought this for years about these four bands, but do you get my drift? Throw out a few band names, and if one of them just hits me like a lightning bolt, I'll know it. But I don't want to explain further or debate it. Let's save that for the episode. Only one of my choices is remotely a metal band. So that's what I wrote. And yeah, just to explain a little more before I read some of these entries, you know, the idea here is that these bands create almost like, you know, you think of a little snow globe that you shake up and there's the snowflakes in there. There's this enclosed world that is a weird world. But very importantly, this world is not one that ends up being kind of a unified sounding thing that a lot of other bands sound like. It is a world unto itself. That's number one. But number two, it does have an east, west, north, and south. I mean, it basically sounds like a world of individual players or fiefdoms that is making this up. So it doesn't sound like particularly like a unified whole. It sounds like a band or a record or a song that you listen to where you can't get the members themselves out of your head when you're listening to it. You don't think the band name, you think all of these original members jumbled up together at once. I think that explains it probably pretty well. But let me tell you quickly, and what I'm going to do here is I'm going to leave out the bands that were suggested that are actually my choices anyways. And I'm just going to go through some of these and very quickly dispel the notion of why I didn't include them or how they almost came close. So we've got Vanya Burek, I mentioned Led Zeppelin, Queen, Cream, and Rush. Okay, all of those are pretty close, but no Cigar. They had certain things about them that were almost too unified. Long story, but those ones are all pretty close. But let's see. Jacob Tannehill said Sons of Apollo, Mr. Big, Asia, any one of them fit the bill. And I actually almost thought Asia that I would include. But I think he's getting the point here. Sons of Apollo, definitely, you know, the big, important band members, Asia, super group. The Police, New York Dolls, says Thomas Hackney. Also, The Pretenders. I would say no on The Pretenders. That wouldn't have come to mind. New York Dolls wouldn't have come to mind. Police is one of my honorable mentions. So with that band, you know, you are thinking this chicken scratch sort of textured guitar playing from Andy. You know, bass, I don't think you think of Sting so much of bass, but you think of that vocalist. And then also with Stuart Copeland, you definitely get a unique drummer that is a distraction. I mean, you're thinking of him when you're hearing these Police songs. So yes, that's a good example of what we're getting at here. Agustin Garcia de Paredes mentioned The Clash. I would say no. It doesn't really fit the bill here. Thomas Hackney comes up with X. A little bit. That's kind of a cool one. Eagles, Blaze Barshaw says, no, I wouldn't say so. I'm not going to leave this one because I kicked them out. Pat Connor says Fleetwood Mac. I actually was going to include Fleetwood Mac, but I couldn't see myself playing a Fleetwood Mac song as one of our five choices here. But definitely, you get that. Yeah, this is a perfect example. And like I say, it was one of mine that was at the top of my head. So you get basically these three distinct vocalists, all with their personalities and their baggage and their own, you know, solo albums, the whole bit. Stevie Nicks, and Lindsey Buckingham, all very distinct vocalists. And you also get, Mick Fleetwood is kind of the patriarch of the band, but you get this very stripped down drumming. John McVie, I don't really think of him too much in this, but Lindsey as well, you think of a very distinct, I said chicken scratch already with Andy Summers. Chicken scratch makes a lot more sense with Lindsey. So again, you're listening to a Fleetwood Mac song or a few in a row and you're thinking, oh, when's this vocalist going to sing, or that one, or, oh, they're doing this together. And then Lindsey gives you this very stark guitar solo. And you get this very sort of straight line, beeline kind of feel to a lot of their songs. So that is a band, when you're listening to them, I can't get the members individually out of their heads, hence Bands of Individuals. Okay. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, don't know enough about them. Beatles, no, I wouldn't say so. Kiss, I wouldn't say so. Because in the end, you basically get this band that sounds kind of like other bands. It's not that big a deal, right? Black Sabbath, I wouldn't say so. The Doors is kind of interesting. I would kind of agree with The Doors, but again, with The Doors, I kind of think more so of keyboardists and, basically keyboards and vocals is what I think about with The Doors. So let's see what else we got here. Foghat, no. Genesis, too many members, too many different versions, I would say no. Faith No More, wouldn't say so. A little bit. I can understand that. I'm going to leave that out because that is one of my choices. Way to go, Shannon Mahaffey. By the way, who have we heard from here? Scott Carson, Colson Veer, Schumann Ong, Rick Friel. Let's see. Chris Cook mentions Kiss. Andrew Theo mentions Blue Oyster Cult. I wouldn't say so. Metallica, no, definitely not. Says Joe Becht. Jeb Wright, buddy of mine, comes in with Floyd. A little bit. Wouldn't say so fully. Cheap Trick, no. What else? Deep Purple Mark II, says Nick Ermolovich. I would say not really there. Steve McNary mentions one that I am going to use here, but he also mentions Judas Priest and Slayer and AC/DC. I would say no. So there you go. Andrew Theo mentions a few more, giving a little more helpful definition. 4 or 5 individuals, while we know they contribute bits and songs, they would have also to be writers. BOC, UFO, no, I wouldn't say so. So yeah, it's funny. I read this and thought and had some concern that maybe I'm not getting the point that this doesn't really exist. But after you hear my entries, hopefully you will agree that they do exist. So thanks everybody for all those contributions. So let's get this started. So that's the longest we've gone without a song in an episode of this. Take a listen to this. This is our first one, and we shall discuss. This is The Who with The Punk and the Godfather from Quadrophenia, October 26, 1973. All right, so this is the band that I think absolutely defines this idea. This is the band I've always had in my head every time I write a book or a review, and I would say, Who-like. And it's because of, obviously, the Who, but it is because of this idea. So why is the Who one of these? So when I play a Who song, I hear the gaps between John Entwistle's very busy, very top-heavy bass playing. He's off basically soloing on his own quite often, these great bass lines. And then way over here, way over to the left, east, north, like I say, north, south, east, west, you hear Keith Moon doing kind of the same thing. He's playing along. He's playing the riff on the drums sometimes. You know, people say that he plays a little bit to what Pete does. But he's soloing. He's very distinct. He's this drummer that, he's like the star of the show in a lot of Who songs. And this is my favorite Who album. And I like, you know, this song I picked as an example of all this going on. You've got this lead singer who's you know, a lot of people think he's the most important guy in the band. He's the lead singer. Well, he's not the most important guy in the band because he's not writing the songs. But he has this big voice, this big mane of curly blonde hair. He's a distinctive guy. He's shouting up there. You can't ignore him either. And then we've got Pete Townsend, who, one of my favorite guys of all time when it comes to rockers, the creativity, very distinct guitar sound. Again, a very, very thin and twee, and he makes a lot of noises, but he plays acoustic guitar. He does synthesizers, right? But he plays electric in a very distinct way where you notice what he's doing. And then on many Who songs, he's singing. So this is the band, like I say, is the definition of this idea of bands of individuals. It's the band that truly defines it, you know, way further in every extreme that I could possibly imagine. I don't see Who songs coming out as this one thing, this one sound. I truly see it as a snow globe of four fiefdoms. All right, moving on. Take a listen to this. Yeah, you're really getting some stuff here that you don't normally get on these episodes. Take a listen to this. This is Yes with Parallels from my favorite Yes album, Going for the One, July 15th, 1977. All right, so Yes to me is the most Who-like of all the prog bands. I truly believe that. Okay, I picked something of the sort of the classic lineup because it is the one with the strongest personalities and the strongest examples of this. Into the Trevor Rabin era, I don't feel this applies as much, but you get this super important guy, John Anderson, writing lyrics with this crazy high voice. He's kind of the leader of the band. He looks like a twee little hippie, but he's cracking the whip with these guys. He's basically a pretty fierce and strong personality. His personality does not match that innocent little, choir boy voice of his. So he's important, and he brings this weird, you know, Eastern mystical philosophy to everything he's doing. So he's bringing, like I say, a philosophy, a baggage to the band, like a whole, you know, treatise of dusty texts to what he does in the band. You got Chris Squire, who's basically the prog version of a John Entwistle. And what you're going to notice in all of these, to make this concept happen, every one of these bands I picked has a strong, distinct bassist in it. So there's a clue as to who's coming. So Rick Wakeman, you've got this this force of nature who has something, I don't know, he's got like 100 albums out. So not only is he just the keyboardist in this band, he's got this visual with the long robes and the long hair. He's the funny man. He's the talker. He's had his radio show and stuff, but he's also a super, super important member of the band. And he's known for these big swoopy synthesizers, and in this one you hear sort of the church organ sound that he does as well. So again, crazy important guy in the band, even though he's only the keyboardist. Alan White doesn't quite fit this very much. I don't think Alan has a, you know, a particular style that you pull out and you hear totally. So he's maybe, you know, God love him. I love the guy. You know, he's obviously the Yes drummer of, you know, of choice basically on almost everything. But you don't listen to this and you're not distracted by the drumming and say, wow, that's a certain drummer that we know, that drummer. Finally, you've got Steve Howe. You don't hear what Steve is kind of known for the most on here. Steve is kind of that wiry guitarist. There's a little bit of that you hear in here. But again, Steve has a very distinct style and you hear it across lots of the Yes material. So again, even though this is five guys making a lot of noise, it's five guys making a lot of noise that sounds like a progressive version of The Who. All right, so let's take a short break and we shall be right back. All right, moving on here. History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff. This is episode 47, Bands of Individuals. Here's another real left field choice. Nobody mentioned this one. Granted, you know, when you go on to my Facebook page for this, you know, our tribe is kind of thinking in hard rock, heavy metal terms. So I've kind of thrown you a curveball here. And this is the biggest of all curveballs. Take a listen to this. This is The Stranglers with Nice and Sleazy.
We came across the West Sea. We didn't have much idea of the kind of climate waiting. We used our hands for guidance, like the children of a preacher, like a dry tree seeking water, or a daughter. Nice and sleazy, nice and sleazy does it.
All right, so I consider The Stranglers almost like the Who of post-punk. You know, Magazine to me is the Pink Floyd of post-punk. There really aren't too many bands that I would think of as the Who of punk, although The Damned would fit that, and I almost picked The Damned here. But there are certain things about The Damned, I think, that fall down, possibly in the guitar thing and all the changing of the members. So it doesn't have this thing, this through line throughout all the catalog. But The Stranglers totally fit this to me. Basically, what you hear in here is you hear that this crazy weave of these geometric rhythms. So you've got Jet Black with his sort of, you know, deceptively simple but odd time signatures and stuff at the drum end of things. You hear Dave Greenfield. I want to dedicate this episode to dear Dave. Dave just recently died. He's the keyboardist in the band. The band just revered him as a pioneer. He comes up with all these crazy synthesizer sounds and really innovative keyboard lines that are super up and prominent in what's going on. You've got a vocalist in Hugh Cornwell here who has a very distinct low voice. So that's pretty interesting. And then you also have, again, a very, very strong bassist in Jean-Jacques Burnell, and you hear that on here. So you get that really stun, really toppy Chris Squire, Geddy Lee, Lemmy, John Entwistle bass on here. So again, Stranglers, what do you get? I mean, this is a perfect example. I wanted to pick this. This is a perfect example of, again, the snow globe where you look off in that corner, there's Hugh, you look off in that corner, there's Jet, you look off, Dave, JJ. So you don't get a unified sound, you get a bunch of things that weave together that create a very, very odd world. The Strangler have been so good at keeping together throughout all this whole career. Obviously, they had the big falling out with Hugh, and it's Baz Warren, you know, big bald guy, lead singing and playing guitar very, very ably and making the Stranglers like a totally valid, very cool act. And they've stuck to more or less this sound, this strange world that they created kind of on their own. All right, so moving on, number four, History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff. Take a listen to this. Another real left field thing. Shannon, you absolutely nailed it. You knew I would pick this. You can read my mind. Take a listen. This is King Crimson with The Howler from Beat, my favorite of the three records in a row here, June 18th, 1982. Yeah.
Suspense.
All right, so I love this era of King Crimson. I've said before, I think I've even said it on this podcast, I would love to write a book even just on these three albums. You get the red one, Discipline. This is the rejuvenated, reformed King Crimson for the 80s. So you get Discipline, the red one, Beat, the blue one, and then you get Three of a Perfect Pair, the yellow one, and that's it. And then they kind of move on and it gets... yeah, it's a long story. It gets to be a mess. Too much instrumental, too much noise, EPs, long albums spread apart. We don't get enough songs for the rest of the catalog. It kind of annoys me. I'm not a big fan of the modern King Crimson, although I saw them live and it blew me away with the three drummers and all that stuff. Crazy, crazy chops. But anyways, Beat is my favorite of these, so I wanted to pick one from Beat. And again, this is the perfect example of a band that is just like four very distinct disparate parts coming together, but not two together, to make a world, an environment, an ecosystem. So you've got Bill Bruford, super distinct drummer. He was the early Yes drummer, of course. But you know, with Bill, you get this very cool, fluid, melodic sound. He loves his tom-toms, big floppy tom-tom sound. But really cool, distinct drummer. Love the guy. You get Robert Fripp, super... you know, distinct guitarist in what he does. He's known for the looping and then also this sort of synthesized sound that he does and kind of really atonal things. So he's got a few things in his chest, but you always know it's him when he does this. He's done some amazing, amazing solo albums, Exposure, and great, great stuff on the Peter Gabriel albums. You get Adrian Belew, probably my favorite rocker of all time. Love what he does, but again, he's the only lyricist in the band, and he's got only vocalist in the band, probably the guy writing all the lyrics as well, but only vocalist in the band, and he does all these, you know, he has a very distinct sound in his voice, but again, he's in there supercharging the band with another completely distinct guitar sound. So he's known to be the guy who likes creating, you know, animal noises and almost comedic sounds on the guitar. Basically, he's kind of a noisenik, a noisemaker. He comes up with these crazy, crazy sounds that sounds like the jungle, basically. So he's that guy in the band. And then you've got Tony Levin, one of the most distinct bassists of prog rock of the era. He's the guy known for the Chapman stick, you know, bald guy mustache, you know, that knee pad thing going. He's got the Chapman stick. You've seen him with the upright bass, you know, on the little pointy thing, and the funk fingers where he can play, you know, he can hit the bass strings with these sort of stylized drumsticks on the end of his fingers. But he's also known, you know, for his great fretless licks, and you hear that on these albums as well. I mean, check him out on you know, the classic Peter Gabriel material as well, right? But yeah, so there you go. King Crimson, another one of these bands of individuals. It, you know, a weird, weird world is created. But when I'm playing this band, all I can think of is all those individual members and their super strong personalities. All right, moving on to our last one. I promised I would take us back to heavy metal and pick a heavy metal band. And this is a band that is heavy, heavy on my mind because I'm finishing up the third of a trilogy of books on them. Take a listen to this. This is Iron Maiden with The Ghost of the Navigator. All right, so this is from Brave New World, May 29th, 2000. You know, Maiden is a band that I've basically come to the conclusion that they are very Who-like. And again, you know, the reasons this sort of comes out, this is a funny one because I do not feel this at all in the guitar world with the band. Dave versus Adrian versus Yannick. barely can tell them apart. They think so much alike and they do so much alike, and then they do those weaves together where they're cooperating anyways. I really don't see a huge difference in the guitar thing that they do, and I don't really feel that there's a distinct guitar thing they do other than, you know, the very celebrated thing, which is those harmony leads that they do. So that's the cool thing from Maiden. But that is an important thing, and it does contribute to the Who-like aspect of this band. Again, strong bassist. So this is a theme right throughout all of these five here. Steve is a super important part of this band. I wanted to pick a song that has that toppy bass on it, but as time goes on, or as Paul Di'Anno calls it, clacky bass, as time goes on, he doesn't actually do this so much. He'll come back to us with a little bit of a regular bass sound on some of the later material, which is kind of cool. But no, I wanted to pick something that had this sort of sound. And also, Steve is known as the leader of the band, and he's also known as the chief lyricist of the band, splitting things roughly 60-40, would you say, with Bruce? 65-35, that kind of thing. So that's kind of important. And then you do have a vocalist that you can't get out of your mind when he's singing. I mean, this is a strong, strong personality, just a dynamo of energy and a super unique sound. Actually forgetting one, and also very important, Nico McBrain on drums. You know, essentially he does remind me of Keith Moon. He's got that same kind of loony personality to him. He's obviously a lot more grounded than Keith Moon was, but he does have that kind of goofy English humor to him. But he also plays somewhat Keith Moon-like. He's a little traditional in what he does with his fills, but he likes to hit a lot of things, and he plays with a lot of energy, and there's a lot of, you know, innovative things that he has to get up to, you know, forced into it almost by the, you know, the different time signatures and all these long instrumental passages that you get out of Nico. And there's a lot of Maiden songs where you really do feel that Who-ness going on, this chemistry between the bands. That's a word I haven't mentioned here. There's a chemistry that goes on, that's this firing back and forth between all these distinctive players. So I've basically come to the conclusion after, you know, writing these three Iron Maiden books, and I had two before this as well, but this is the trilogy that's sort of the redo of, long story, out of print stuff, basically turning this into normal books. We had Where Eagles Dare, Holy Smoke, which is out of print, and the next one's going to be called Empire of the Clouds. I still have some Where Eagles Dare, and probably I might put Holy Smoke back into print when I put out Empire of the Clouds. So anyways, there is, I've noticed across all of this, even the later days material, they essentially settled into a sound that is all theirs. Nobody can copy them. Nobody dares copy them. But is, you know, they are an ecosystem unto themselves, one made up of these personalities. You know, the first bunch of albums, I don't feel that about. They're all different from each other, but they basically settle in on Peace of Mind, and then, you know, quite frankly, make more or less the same record all the way through with minor variations. They basically do have a sound. It is their sound, and that's what they do. All right, so that's it. Those are our five here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. Hope you like that. Bands of individuals. I just wanted to mention a couple of honorable mentions that I thought also kind of fit this idea, and people had pointed out. There's really only two that I haven't mentioned that I do want to mention. I almost put Van Halen in here. I do feel that they kind of belong in this thing. I've often described Van Halen as Who-like. They've obviously got the same configuration, four guys. One of them is a front man. Right? So three instrumentalists. Interestingly enough, the guitar player got into keyboards like Pete Townsend. But you do hear very distinct guitar all the time. You can't get that drummer out of your mind. Bass is a little bit of a different story. I don't think Mikey really has a specific bass sound, and sometimes it's Eddie playing anyways. And then you've got a strong vocalist up top with a big personality, whether it's David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar. Right? Or Gary Cherone. Actually, there's, you know, we just put up a side episode of our Contrarians YouTube show. We did our first episode on Van Halen 3. That's, what do we call it? the worst album edition. So we basically debate the worst album of a band, the goods and bads of it, or whatever. Mostly bad, of course. So there you go. There are some honorable mentions that. One more. Gillen. Gillen is a band that I always think about all the time because I love them so much. One of my favorite bands of all time. But Gillen to me is the Doors of heavy metal, or the punk version of heavy metal, or the post-punk version of heavy metal. You can't get that keyboardist, Colin Townes, out of your mind. Ian Gillen is obviously the leader of the band. John McCoy has that stun bass that he does, that same toppy distorted bass. Mick Underwood, really cool. Mick Underwood, Mick Fleetwood. Sorry, Mick. Very distinct drummer as well. Kind of like noisy, a lot of energy, a lot of snare work out of him. And then, when Yannick was in the band, I wouldn't say there was a distinctness to the guitar thing, but definitely Bernie Torme had a distinct kind of punky, snarly Hanoi Rocks attitude to what he was doing. So, yeah, again, you did get kind of a world created, this strange, strange Gillen sound that you could hear the separate parts. So there you go. I know I've driven this point home completely because we had our five and we probably talked about a good 8 or 9 more in a fair bit of detail. Let's wrap it up there. That was it. Band of Individuals, episode 47. Go to the Facebook page for this. Comment. Let me know what you think. For all your book needs, you can go to martinpopoff.com. Everything is there with PayPal buttons. The Rush book is selling really well. This is Anthem Rush in the 70s. There's going to be Limelight Rush in the 80s and Driven. Rush in the 90s and In the End later on. But The Merciful Fate, I ran out, but I am going to do a small reprint of that. And like I say, the Maiden is available. The Priests are available. Basically anything that's in print, I have copies of there. And I will be getting copies of my new Blue Oyster Cult, a visual biography. Those are on their way over here from the UK. I will be signing and selling those as well. Let's wrap it up there. Thanks again for listening. Hear you again next time.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.